So then mantras 1 to 3, the Ishavasya principle. Right. So these verses then go together, they have a common theme. The Supreme Personality of Godhead owns, controls, and pervades both the cosmic creation and the living beings. Knowing this, one should not claim false proprietorship over anything and should accept only his allotted quota. This kind of consciousness, Ishavasya, is the only way by which the humanity can achieve peace. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5:29. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Yeah, so, okay. So this element is that because our identity, our ego, that's going to make us, it has to give us some connection to what we are dealing with. Right? Because the ego means your identity. With that identity, you have a relationship, you perceive your relationship with everything else in the creation. Right? So the ego is actually a very important element of rasa. The difficulty is that false ego means it's not a correct identity. Right? True ego is, you know, we're servant of Krishna. You know, Krishna's position, that's true identity, true ego. Right? So what we're speaking here is that establishing, because we already think we're God. So you think, why doesn't it start with the living entity? No, the living entity already thinks he's God, right? The controller and enjoyer. Therefore, you start off with pointing out, well, actually, someone else is God, right? The post is already taken. We're sorry. You came with your resume too late, right? He's already been God since time immemorial, you know, so we're sorry. So, therefore, everything we should see in connection with the Lord, whatever possession we have, whatever ability we have, ourselves, everything is connected with the Lord. So with that identity, then that means all actions, all activities, everything will also be connected with the Lord. Right? That makes sense. Okay, and then Prabhupada points out that that's the only way that human beings can be peaceful. Because as long as they think we're the lords, there's always a problem, right? Because before, the kings are devotees also. Therefore, they know they're just managing this part of Krishna's creation. You know, that's their service. They're not thinking I'm the lord of the world, so trying to take it over, right? I think it's 12th canto. Then Bhumi Devi is laughing at all these different kings, you know, that they come and go, you know, they all come and try to take over, march with their armies and, you know, take over this, and then they die, someone else marches, takes over that, and it just goes on and on and on. But they all die and Bhumi's still sitting there just as she was, right? So it has nothing to do with them, technically. Though they claim this is all mine, right? You know, so like that. So it'd be. So interesting concept. So therefore, even they were peaceful because they didn't need to fight because they saw everything connected to the Lord, right? Yudhishthira didn't have any problem. But we see Duryodhana did because he had a tendency to see nothing in connection with the Lord, right? So therefore, he was so much trouble, right? Does that make sense? The atheists do not accept the principle of Ishavasya because they think that just by assembling and manipulating the material elements, they became their rightful proprietors. Srila Prabhupada refutes this false conception. Quote, take for example our dwelling, which is made of earth, wood, stone, iron, cement, and so many other material things. If we think in terms of Sri Ishupanishad, we must know that we cannot produce any of these building materials ourselves. We can simply bring them together and transform them into different shapes by our labor. A laborer cannot claim to be a proprietor of a thing just because he has worked hard to manufacture it. Ishvapanishad Mantra 1 Purport. Right. So, just as you hire someone, they come, do the work, build your house, he can't say, because I did the work, the house is mine. Right? Because you've provided all the ingredients. Right? you're maintaining him by giving him money or whatever you're doing, and you've given him all the elements that he's going to build the house with. So he can't claim it. But modern man, on the same principle, he's taking elements that he doesn't provide, he's being maintained by someone else, and then he puts together things of this world and then says, they're mine because I did the work. Right? That's a problem. Right? Therefore, if you're going to be successful in the modern environment, right, with this modern mentality, you have to take up the position of vox populi. Right? Because that's how you're the Lord anyway. Is you as just a common person did something and claim you're the Lord. So if everybody says that, then your culture goes very nicely. Right? Then your modern culture is very well established because you have a bulk of people who are claiming that this is the way it is. Now, if that's not the principle, if someone else is the Lord and all that, then you have to work by authority. Right? And so whether the authority is one or many, it doesn't matter. Authority is authority. And so that will establish what is right and wrong. So then that's a very different method. Because that method then militates against our thinking we're God. Even though impersonalists still try really hard. But whatever. Does that make sense? So that's why there's always this very this clash between the modern and the Vedic. Because the Vedic is establishing authority. Well, the modern is saying, no, we as the people are the authority. Right? Rather than the people have to work still by God's laws. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's making it's an atheistic concept. Right? This Ishvashya principle can be applied in different ways according to the performer's level of spiritual advancement. For the demigod worshippers, Ishvashya would mean that they perform the authorized Vedic rituals to please the devatas. Though attached to the material world, the Karmakandis acknowledge the higher authorities in the universe and obey them. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 3:12, quote, in charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Srila Prabhupada comments in his purport, quote, the demigods are authorized supplying agents on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods, but all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice of the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajna are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely according to different qualities. So we see here the principle is that you're going to have to accept authority. So then the Vedic principle is those who cannot understand the Supreme Lord, right, then they should worship the demigods. Because in any case, it's important that the concept of authority is established within the living entity. Right? There has to be authority. Otherwise, how do you function? There'll be chaos if there's no such thing as authority. So then if they can't accept, you know, God as the supreme authority, then they should accept the demigods. Right? And like that, then it just keeps going down. That's the Vedic principles. You always are accepting authority. You're always working under scripture. You're always working under persons who are more advanced in the science than you are, no matter what it is, right? Does that make sense? No matter how mundane it is, still that same principle of working under guru, sadhu, and shastra is there. And it has to be. Otherwise, it's not proper culture. Right? Now, the idea is that you will progress someone through these stages. Though, unfortunately, if you're not following the process of bhakti, it's a little slow. You could be taking, you know, thousands or millions of lifetimes to progress forward. Right? So that then makes it very, you know, difficult. But the path of bhakti then it moves to this very quickly. But the same principle is applying, is that we may have our desires and needs on a lower platform. It may be on the platform of Sakam. Then by gradually following that, it'll move it to Nishkam, and then from that up to, you know, the platform of liberation. Right? And from that then to the platform of Prema. Right? That makes sense. So, but the same concept is there, is that it's always better that if you can't follow a higher principle, that then the next one down, that one you follow. If that one can't be followed, then you follow one just below that. But you don't just arbitrarily choose where to go. You're always trying to choose the highest platform that you can naturally function at. Right? So therefore the Vedic system has, you have your daily sadhana. And so that you can perform. And then there's occasional things, you come along, you have special festivals, so then that becomes more prominent. Right? So one day in a year you fast until midnight. You know, it's not a regular sadhana. Right? Like that. And then other days till moonrise, other days until noon, like that, you know. And then on regular days, at least until you get out of bed and brush your teeth. Right? So, like that, that austerity is there. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, yes.
If someone doesn't accept the existence of the Supreme Lord or the demigods, can they practice this Vishavasya?
Means then you have to work by authority, because if you're not accepting the demigods, then you technically it can't work properly on the platform of Dharma, right? Because it'll be means your atheistic element becomes stronger. So, but Artha you will do. So therefore the authority of Artha Shastra, those who are bigger, there's kings, so you have to accept their authority. You know, you're accepting Brahman simply just on that authority. You know, like that. So you basically, your Varnashram element can be in place, but your conscious, that will be your higher, but your consciousness would most likely be within Artha or Kama. Like that. You know, is that... Does that make sense? But still, you're working on that authority. That's the Vedic literature. That's the common point, is that no matter what your philosophy is, the culture was exactly the same in principle. Detail is always going to be different, because even those who are following the same culture, there's a slight difference in detail. Right? You know, like that. So there, it was a common culture. It didn't matter whose house you went to, the mood of receiving a guest and serving prasad and, you know, interacting would be the same. You get the same experience whether it was someone who was very cultured, someone who was not, someone was very wealthy, someone who was not, someone who was very devotional, someone who was not. It would be the same. All that would change would be the facility. Someone very wealthy has very fancy things to receive you with. Someone who's not will have very simple. Like that. But in any case, the experience would not be different. Right? Like we see is in the Krishna book, that one story where Krishna, then he goes out to visit two devotees. One's a king and one's a very poor Brahmin. So the one he's received very, very opulently, and the other one he's there, I think that Shrutadeva, where he's so bewildered that he's peeling the bananas, he and his wife are peeling bananas, throwing away the bananas and giving Krishna the peels. And Krishna is happily eating them because of the devotion. Right, so there we can see the extremity between these two, but both of them Krishna is considering as equal, because the devotion was the same. Right, so the one is the devotion is expressed through something simple, the other devotion is expressed through great opulence. But to Krishna, it's the same. So the culture, the experience of the culture is the same. That's what makes the Vedic culture ideal, is that there is a common element for everybody at the same time, as it gives rise to everybody being able to act according to their own individual nature. Right? So even though the moderns claiming that they're more liberal, all they're actually saying is, we don't follow the Vedic. But when it comes to actually accommodating all the stratas within the culture, and they all having their place, it's not really, doesn't exist. That's that. They don't really have that broad mind. They don't have a method for it, right? They try to address the different things, but actually, it's not someone who's poor is not considered situated well, right? But in the Vedic system, you could be poor and be well situated. Right? Chanakya Pandit lived in a hut. He begged, even though he's the prime minister. But he's still respected. Right? So you wouldn't have these kind of... the broadness in what philosophies you can have is very great. Right? But the culture is one. Does that make sense? So that makes it socially work very well. So that means there must be some kind of form that then everybody can relate to. But that form has to be so broad that it can accommodate everyone. Right? So basically, the only one that has that broad of a viewpoint is God. So only God's laws can establish such a broad view that everybody can be accommodated. Right? So everyone, according to their quota, then is able to function within the same social system. Right? Has the same opportunity to make spiritual advancement. Right? So spiritually, it's equal opportunity. But as we see, is because everyone has a different quota, that the medium through which they express this equal opportunity is different. Right? Does that make sense? So this idea that it has to be the same external form, that means then you're actually neglecting the different natures of the different living entities. So it's a much narrow vision. It actually never works. Does that make sense? So we're seeing this principle is that what the Vedic says it does do. Right? But you have to understand it because it's very sophisticated. And the modern, it doesn't actually do what it says it's supposed to do. It has some very good, the word comes to mind, platitudes or something. That has all these nice platitudes that they profess. And what they're professing is very nice and very good things. But unfortunately, because it's not based on God's laws, it doesn't actually attain what they're hoping to gain. So it comes short. It falls sometimes seriously short of providing what is hoped for. Well, the Vedic culture then is following God's laws, then it properly matches what should be happening. It means what they say and what will happen does happen, as much as can happen within the material world. Right? You always have to keep that in mind also. Okay, so that was this position. So that whatever one's position, one can find a place and be able to function within the Vedic environment, right? Then more advanced than the demigod worshippers are the devotees of the Supreme Lord, who accept him as the ultimate owner of everything and dovetail their material propensities with him. Srila Prabhupada warns us that unless we strictly abide by the Ishvabhasha principle, we will be considered thieves. The material energy is most expert in keeping the insincere souls away from Krishna. Therefore, a dishonest person will be exposed. As stated in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 8.1.10, Daivihyesha gunamayi mama maya duratiya, Bhagavad Gita 7.14. No one can surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. Right. So it's a matter of the externals aren't enough, right? Because the external energy... that we're dealing with the externals won't actually prove the point. One actually has to have the mentality. Because the material energy, she is both the gross and the subtle aspects of material nature. So if you're using the gross, maybe other living entities will be impressed. But Maya is able to see both, because she is both. She can understand your intention. So Prabhupada says, you cannot surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions. Right? She knows everything everywhere, and there's nothing that she won't see. So she knows your intention, and because of that, you will get the result of your intention. Right? Your intention is devotional, you get a devotional result. The intention is not devotional, you'll get the material result. Right? If it's pious material, you get pious results. It's impious material, you get impious results. Therefore, we won't get away from her vigilance. So there's no way to cheat. So if you connect yourself to the Lord, she is a servant of the Lord, then she will also be assisting in the service. Right? Just like you have the mother and father, they assist the child. Right? So the material nature is the mother. Right? Krishna is the father, she's the mother. So they're always willing to help. But then one has to deal in that relationship. Right? Otherwise they'll help, you know, indirectly. In his purports to Sri Ishupanishad, Srila Prabhupada suggests yet another aspect of Ishavasya consciousness. To accept only one's allotted quota stands not merely for taking as much resources as required. It also means that the living entity should follow the specific plan the Lord has designed for him. Quote, every part and partial of the complete whole is endowed with some particular energy to act according to the Lord's will. When the part and partial living entity forgets his particular activities under the Lord's will, he is considered to be in Maya, illusion. Thus, from the very beginning, Sri Ishupanishad warns us to be very careful to play the part designated for us by the Lord. Mantra 4 purport. So what's interesting is that endowed with some particular energy to act according to the Lord's will, that means everybody can act according to the Lord's will. So this idea that there are parts of my life that can't be connected to Krishna, that doesn't exist. Because everybody's nature then can be connected. It's coming from Krishna, therefore it already is connected. Anything expands from something is connected. The child expands from the parents, they're connected. Right? So therefore, the living entity, you know, coming from the Lord is connected. All the activities of this world are coming from the Lord, therefore they're connected. It's just a matter of whether we get the credit for connecting them. Right? As we were studying in Second Canto, then the universal form is elements of the material, is the full field of activities of the material world. Every aspect there is in the material world within the field of action is within the universal form. That means all personalities, all mental states, all intelligence, all senses, all forms of bodies, all actions that can happen, any action that can happen between any of these elements in any combination is all the universal form. So already they're going together perfectly. They're matching very well. Now, we then desire to take part in that activity. Taking part in that activity, then as before, we claim that we're the doer. Right? And therefore, the result is ours. Then, so now if that activity is considered pious, you're going to get a pious result. If it's impious, you'll get an impious result. Because you're claiming it. Otherwise, they're perfectly going on in themselves and they're perfectly matched. The problem comes is that the living entity, or the human being, is meant to elevate themselves to God consciousness, not stay in just, you know, animal consciousness. Therefore, when the human being involves themselves in all these activities, then they can either get credit if it's progressive, or they will not get credit, you know, they'll get some trouble if it's not progressive, it's regressive. Does that make sense? Well, kind of. In other words, our Krishna showed to Arjuna in the universal form that all these different aspects of the creation are already going on. It's already happening. It's like when you go to a carnival, the rides are already moving. They're already working. All right, and then you get attracted and say, oh, I want to take part in that ride or this ride. Right? And then if you go enough, it's a regular thing, you go and you have friends, you know, then it's like, oh, let's go on, you know, your ride, or let's go on my ride, because you identify with it. But is it your ride? No, it belongs to the carnival. So it's already going on. These activities are already going on. The Lord's different energies are already interacting with each other. We then take part in it. Right? We see something happening and, oh, I want to be part of that. And we identify with it. And we think, because I'm identifying, it is me. And it's mine. So therefore, the experience is yours, and the reaction is yours. But actually, what's going on is still controlled by someone else. Yes?
Isn't Arjuna in the right place at the right time?
Yes. If you're at the right place at the right time due to your previous karma, then you get an experience that you very much appreciate. If you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're still getting the results of your previous activities. You know. But that's why you have these saying, he was at the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time, because you have no control. Or, you know, when you're hot, you're hot. It's, you know, it's happening. It's going, it's you're on a roll. All these things, what do they indicate? We just take it, oh, it's all happening and he's together. But actually what it indicates means we're not in control of it. And whenever it happens, it happens. It's got nothing to do with us. We may think, well, tonight is happening because I did this. But if he does that again, it still doesn't happen. Right? So that's why they become bewildered, because they find, you know, how you say, unconsciously one starts to understand I'm not in control. But consciously one does not want to acknowledge that. Does that make sense? Yes.
I'd like to ask you about this, the quota that mentioned for every living entity. So if there is a quota, then what is the, I mean, how can we take less of the quota or more of the quota? If
it's you're working on the mana principle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, if quota is already there, then what is the question of, you know, why is it mentioned?
Why would it be mentioned? Because here you're talking about that is a problem. It's not just maintenance, it's actually your method of advancement. Means you go out in the morning and you pick up the mana, whether you picked up less or you picked up more. If you picked up more, it would shrink to the size that you need, and if it was less, it would grow to the size that you need. But here you're taking care of basically kids, right? You know, children of God, right? Children, right? So therefore you're dealing on that method, but it's not part of their process to advance. Right. Other than they recognize and are grateful to God. Right, but we find after a while, then they even that much was a difficulty. So they weren't grateful, and they wanted something else to eat, and so they got something else to eat. And while they were eating that something else, they started dying. So then they figured, okay, we'll go back to the mana. You know, right? We'll be happy with that. Right, so. But it's different in that, so that's just on the neutral state of just, you're just being taken care of and appreciating. So you're dealing at best with this shanta element. But here, the Vedic system then is more dynamic, is that your quota is there, and you yourself have to be able to appreciate it and be satisfied with it. Right? The other one's happening just by the way it's arranged, you have to be satisfied. You know, just like a child is satisfied with what he gets. Like that. If he's satisfied, he'll be happy. If he's not satisfied, he'll never be happy. But here, it's a matter of you yourself are in control of how much or more or less of this quota you're taking. And because of that, that way you're elevating yourself. So the focus becomes on the Abhideya. Well, the other one, the focus is simply on the Sambandha. You know, there's God and you're his humble servant. And then you appreciate that. He does so many miraculous things, therefore he's God and I'm not. And therefore I should appreciate him. So you're just trying to establish Sambandha. The Abhideya was very, very slow in being taken up. You know what I'm saying? It's just like there. You hit the rock, you know, with the staff, and then the water comes out. But there had to be action. Right? Then you're supposed to use the holy name, but there's no faith in the holy name, therefore you hit the rock with your staff again. But that was the wrong Abhideya. Therefore, the Prayojana was different. Everybody else went into Canaan, and he sat there watching everybody else go in. Because the result of the process he received. Does that make sense? There was a lack of faith in the name, so therefore he didn't get to go. Does that make sense? So you have all these elements then. Means, in other words, we can see there's a difference in the level that you're dealing at. So here the Vedic level is, the quota is there, you're trained in what is your quota, and then it's up to you to maintain it. If you maintain that, you will be satisfied. If you don't maintain it, then you won't be satisfied. Right? Well, the other one is, whether they can maintain it or not, you take care of them. You understand? So as long as they're comfortable with that and are submissive to that, take part in it, it works. Right? The cat carries the kitten, but as long as they sit there peacefully. If they squiggle and worm, there's going to be a problem. Right? Well, the Vedic, it's a combination, is that the Lord is taking care, but at the same time, you're reciprocating and showing your understanding and commitment to that. Because the other was, it's not that they're committed to the mana, it's just that's all there is. You know what I'm saying? So, them being satisfied with them, that's nice, that's good. But here it's a matter of in knowledge that you know, and therefore you have the opportunity to perform the activities that will be the result of getting what is your quota. Does that make sense? So it's not the same principle, it's the same principle, it's just taken to a more developed degree. You know what I'm saying? That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakura is mentioning, that there, technically speaking, is no difference in religions. They're all working on the same principles because they're all coming from God. But it just depends upon the individual how far it's going, at what level they're working, right? You know, the son is in the family, so, and he is the son in the family, and the relationships are all there, but what does he do? So when he's 1 month old, he basically just cries and gets taken care of. You know, when he's 3 years old, then he's still taken care of, but there is some conscious things that he doesn't do, things that are wrong. You know, as he grows up, gets more educated, then he actually starts to take part and perform duties within that household. And as he grows up and is more mature, he may even be running that household. Right? It belongs to his father, but he's the one that's managing it. Right? The father takes a back seat. That makes sense? So all religions are saying the same thing. It's just at what level our participants or the are taking, means are qualified for. Right? So they all give you the complete picture, but depending upon where they're starting from, then you're going to have, that will be prominent. So it will look as though their rituals and everything are different, therefore the religion's different. No, they're only different because the situation's different. Right? You have one doctor, and he's giving out medicine to people to make them healthy, bring them to the same platform. But depending where they're starting from, one gets cold medicine, one gets flu medicine, one gets stomach medicine, one gets rash medicine. You know, and so depending upon their particular conditioning, they're given a process to come to the same platform of health. So all religions are showing how to get to that platform of transcendence. But unfortunately, most people take the external, the ritual, as the prominent element, and therefore can't actually see what the religion is professing. Yes?
Raj, modern day Christians, at least in the West, in Australia, they have this idea that if you're wealthy, and then you're blessed by God, but if you're poor, then you're not receiving the blessings of God. And that's, you know, that they're blessed because they have so much wealth.
They're blessed because they have so much wealth. I mean, the element that it is a blessing of God, that is true, because any opulence will be coming from the Lord. And that you have opulence means you did something correct. Otherwise, how would you have it? Right? No, over that side. Does that make sense? So that is an element, but to take that as the only blessing or that as the main symptom, that would not necessarily be good. More important would be blessed with faith, with proper understanding, that proper commitment. Okay, you have the wealth, but you would have to be more blessed to be able to share that wealth, or more blessed to be able to properly utilize that wealth so it both grows and you're able to share it. Like that. So they don't necessarily talk about that. They just use these means. It is a correct perception, but to take that as the all in all means that you're basing your religious faith basically in artha. you know, rather than Dharma or higher. And we also see is that it also would naturally be a position they take because their prayojana is go to heaven. And nowadays when they talk about going to heaven, they just talk about that you'll be in heaven, it'll be nice, you'll be enjoying yourself, though they can't really tell you what that is, right? Right? The Muslims talk about green embroidered couches, you know, but the Christians don't even have that. They just know it's there. There's clouds and you somehow or another sit up there and it works like that. And then I guess because that's too esoteric and you couldn't get too much inspiration, people weren't willing to go out and get themselves killed or something, you know. Then you say heaven on earth. So then you think, wow, right here, you know, I will be happy. You know. So then, you know, so that's their goal, so they would look at it that way. You know, it's natural. It's just natural. So it's true to some extent. But the full implication of it, it's not enough. Because a human being needs more than wealth. You know. You know, so they would take it if you had a nice family situation and good relationship with the family and the children, and you were situated nicely in a job and had good social position. They would consider that good because they take piety as spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point.
We can also see it as Krishna's mercy when he takes things away from us.
Yes, that part they don't go because they're not trying to get out of the material world. They talk about spiritual, but basically spiritual just means idyllic material. It means if you had the material, took away all the material pains and all that, you know, so Vaikuntha, then that would be spiritual. But they don't conceive of it as not within the material sphere. So it's still the same material pleasures and facilities. It's still the same family things, and you're just a little pious in that you think of God, you know, so once a week I guess they all go and, you know, say some prayers or something, you know, except for actually. Yeah, well, that would be the general, because if they're, how you say, orthodox, then they got a mantra for everything, you know, like that. They see anything, hear anything, you know, touch anything, there's a mantra for it, right? You see a beggar, there's a mantra for it, you know, like that. There's anything. Is that okay? Yes.
You mentioned that Krishna is like a father, material nature is like a mother. Normally, parents, they don't allow their children to change the internal in their own best. They normally, parents, they don't allow their children to do something that is not in their interest. So why?
That's not in their interest. Okay.
So why the material intent is in all ways?
How do you work with something that is unaware of their interest? Like a small baby, right? When the bigger kid is there, then they're hungry, then mommy tells them you wait half an hour, breakfast is at 9 o'clock, right? Do you tell that to something that's, you know, 6 months old? No, but you're missing the point of the relationship. How is the relationship working?
If somebody's ignorant of the relationship.
But that still doesn't mean that others aren't not, it means the material energy in God are not ignorant. So how does the parent deal with the child? On whose conditions? What is the central point of the relationship there?
Protection.
Okay, but what's it based off of? When the child cries and it's hungry, what happens?
Parents
will feed it. Okay, what if it cries and it's tired? Okay, what if it cries and it wants to, you know, change its nappies? Okay, so now what's it based on? The parents or the child?
Parents.
Okay. Just catch that. Now, how they're going to take care of it, you know, what kind of food they're given, what kind of arrangements they sleep in, what kind of, you know, diapers they're wearing, that's the parents are arranging. But it's being arranged on the need of the child. Does that make sense? So therefore, the need of the living entity in this world is what Krishna then provides for. But according to his conditions. Right? You did nice, therefore you get this fancy arrangement. You didn't do so nice, you get a little bit less fancy arrangement. Does that make sense? So, the point is all this is going on simply because the living entity thinks this is important. Right? Because this isn't the real home. Right? So in other words, you know, over in the Barbie doll house, you know, this is all going on. You know what I'm saying? The spiritual world is the real place where Krishna, his internal potency, and the living entities interact. But this place is here because the living entity thinks this is important. So therefore they're interacting here. Does that make sense? Yes. Understand, unfortunately, they're very stubborn children. So they have a tendency to not understand. So basically, after being through 8,400,000 species of life, having done everything that there is to do in the material world, then sometimes we see they have a tendency, by good association, to decide something's going wrong here. And then they doubt the material existence. Then at that time, by the association of the devotees, then they take up spiritual life. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that element is that free choice, that free will is always there. That is being brought out, but you can only bring it out the more mature the child is. Right? So in this way, then we see some religions don't bring out much independence and freedom. They don't give you much choice. You do things exactly like this. While others give you a much broader range. Does that make sense? Because the maturity is more, so that they can make a better, they're in a better position to make a proper choice. Right? If they're in a position where they won't make a proper choice, then you take care of it for them. Right? Does that make sense? So like that. So then they can choose. So that's the whole idea of duties, is that you can see what it is you need to do and do it. Right? While others who can't see that, then you take care of it for them. Right? So the materialists are blinded, they can't see what has to be done, so therefore then they go, and if they're good kids, then they get a better result. They're bad kids, they get a worse result. Is that okay? The first mantra is related to Abhideya.
Yeah, from first to third is related to Abhideya.
Are you sure?
Abhideya mantras 1 to 4, 9, 11, 15.
Means we gave a few of those things there, an overlap. So what we were saying is from the Dasa Mool, you can see his Lord's energies are perfect and complete. So he's the Lord of the Ishavasha. He is the Supreme Person. That's the first principle. Right? The Lord and his energies are perfect and complete. Second, inconceivable characteristics. That's the third. Right? From characteristics, you get rasa. Like that. So that's all the sambandha there. Right? The Mahabhagavat's vision that gives the different platforms of the Mahabhagavat's vision, the position of the soul in general, and the liberated soul, the non-devotees, and that is the other elements of the soul. Right? The conditioned nature. The devotee's prayer, then we're saying here, that is your Abhideya.
Well, I mean, below it's mentioned that some
about the implications?
What I'm saying is you have different ways you can put this together. Because Ishavasya here as Abhideya means unless you understand the Ishavasya principle, you can't act. You're acting because of that. You understand it's God's and that, in that understanding, then you're acting. So this is the knowledge by which you have to perform the Abhideya.
This also can be related to Sambandha because...
That's what we said. It means all the different aspects have that. So the idea is it is being presented in a particular way. So according to that presentation, you are able to appreciate it from that angle. That's why it's very... That's all these things. We're saying the same thing over and over and over again, but from different perspectives, because we're trying to bring it to the point where one is able to appreciate that something happening in this way, you calculate it this way. But if you adjust it, it changes. But it's always working on Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. It just depends upon how you're doing it. You know what I'm saying? It means because you're performing an action. Right, because Ishavasya only comes into play basically with action. Right, you can think whatever you like; it doesn't matter. But when you do something, that's when you actually tell. When you speak, when the senses are engaged, that's how you tell if someone's intelligent. So that action there, then that is based on this. Does that make sense? So here we're talking about like from what is mentioned or from the purports, things are brought out and all that. Because you're looking at the themes of what's there. But it doesn't mean that these things aren't going on in general also. It means you have your overall thing as you're dealing here with the whole process. But it just is the predominance, because it's Ishopanishad. Upanishads are basically establishing, you know, the nature of God. They're dealing with Brahman. So that means they're establishing the nature of Brahman, which is God as the supreme Brahman, the living entity as superior Brahman, and the material world as inferior Brahman. Right? So the Sambandha is your major aspect. If that's in place, Abhideya Prayojana become very easy to deal with. Right? But until you've accepted the principle, then it's not something for discussion. So Upanishads are trying to get you to accept the principle. So in that way, we can see is basically all these different sections are dealing with Sambandha, and only this last one, devotee's prayer, then you'd see there's the element of prayer, means that's Abhideya, you know, that you're offering prayers, as in Bandhanam, but at the same time as you have a goal that you're trying to gain by that prayer, that would indicate your Prayojana. You know what I'm saying? So the emphasis we see is on Sambandha. But at the same time, is when you apply all these things into your life, then you'll see that all these, then these other aspects will come out. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So probably in the purports here, Prabhupada is talking more in these ones about the process of application. Or in these other mantras, the results that you get from that application, and these first mantras, then by, you know, establishing the relationships. You know, because means the verse, there's 18 verses, so that's important, that's a framework, but more important is the purports, right? So when we're studying Gita, this, we're studying purports, right? Because Krishna is giving his, the Adhikaranas are coming, but it'll be the explanations given in the purports that become for us more important. Does that make sense? Like I think it was pointed out once by Jayadwaita Maharaj, is that sometimes if you read the shlokas, it appears that it's going through different kind of topics and changing and all that. But if you just look at the purports, then you'll see it's in just a very consistent flow. It doesn't jump around. So the verse may go back and forth because the people that the verses are being spoken to understand these things. Right? They don't need the purports. But we do, so that consistent philosophy and presentation, that is given in the purports. So for us, purports become prominent. But they're based around the verses, which is what is authority. Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, don't worry about it. It can only be this way or only be that way. It can be both. Right? You can take it that, okay, I have a problem understanding the Ishvasha principles, so I will try to purify myself, you know, by the devotional process and the association of devotees, that I will come to the, understand this. So therefore, the understanding of the Ishvasha principle becomes your prayojana. You know what I'm saying? But then that is just so that that is your natural position or your sambandha, so that you can then perform your activities, abhideya, based on that understanding. Does that make sense? So the same thing can be all three. It just depends upon the perspective. That's why the attitude is so important. Right? Because when you start a race, right? Right? So there's a line there. You call that the beginning. But somehow at the end of the race, they call that the finish. Right? And in the middle, it's just where you cross and you get your laps. Right? So in the beginning, it's you know, it starts the beginning, it's the middle, and it's the end. So does that mean races are gone? So you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Of racing, I am the start and finish line. Okay? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why we're looking at it from so many angles, so that we can see which is the appropriate position to take at the particular moment. Then you know the philosophy. Otherwise, it becomes dogmatic. So devotees will complain about the philosophy and the rules, saying it's dogmatic. And no, that's application. The Vedas are never dogmatic. Like that. It's not. It can't be. It's from God. God's not dogmatic. Right? So we have a narrower vision, it becomes dogmatic. As we broaden that vision, then that dogmaticness reduces or disappears. So that's the whole idea, is to create a vision. Right? We're studying the Shastras to get that vision. Right? Therefore, this course, the degree, is Shastra Chakshus. Being able to see through the eyes of Scripture. That's what we're looking for. So when the tests and all these different things that are there, that's what we're trying to ascertain. Not in how much you know, or even how much you understand, how much you can apply. Right? How much you know then should indicate your facility for how much you could understand. How much you understand would be your, you know, potential for how much you can apply. Right? So we're looking at that application, because it's that application that will give you your realization. So if it's come to that point, to manana, applied manana, that's what we're looking for. Because shravana, that's a good thing, but on its own, it doesn't have any meaning. Right? Does that make sense? So the karmis and jnanis, they don't actually properly apply manana. One does the activity without the understanding. The other has the understanding, doesn't do the activity. Right? Does that make sense? So, devotional service means you have the understanding and you perform the activity. So that's what we're looking for. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityai Gaura Premanandi. Right around his hand, okay, thank you.